Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. We'll be discussing the England squad and which of the four goalkeepers should be starting, who the best striker in the Premier League is at the moment. Is it Morata, Kane, Lukaku or Aguero? And also the Champions League stories, including Ancelotti being sacked as Bayern manager and also a debate on Liverpool.
Premier League champions for 2017.
I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
And joining us, Peter Prickett from the V2 Academy.
Evening.
You guys both well?
Yeah, great, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
I'm excellent, as always.
That's good to hear. All right, so I've got a few quick stories just to start off the show. Someone who's probably not feeling too excellent, Benjamin Mendy, who said on Twitter that he's joining Injury FC on loan. He's done his cruciate ligament, will be out for about 9 months, basically the rest of the season. So we're probably expected to see him next season. But at least he can see the funny.
Yeah, he's been fantastic on Twitter. I love his posts. And it's a shame for him because he looked like he was straight into the Premier League without any problems. He looked a real threat for City down that flank. They've not really got any other replacement. I know they've got players that are more sort of on the other flank traditionally, but it's a sort of a makeshift replacement for quite a few months now for them.
Wasn't there a rumour about them signing Bernardo Silva to play him as a fullback? I'm sure I remember hearing that at the time. Might be crazy, but if there's no other option, could we see one of the best attacking midfielders in Europe, or certainly from last season, playing as a left back for City?
I think with Guardiola as the coach, it's not beyond the realms of imagination, is it? He plays such an attacking. You know, he had Jordi Alba at left back, who's basically
With Alba and Alves being wingers until they joined. Well, actually, Alba, Alves, Mascherano, not defenders until Pep took.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he spent most of his time in the opposition half anyway, wouldn't he, even as a left back? So
as long as he takes it better than Oxlade-Chamberlain does, because he...
And that Liverpool was stupid enough to throw £35 million at him.
Alright, moving on, Adrian Silva, who joined Leicester after the deadline, has been watching his teammates behind glass as he's just been watching his teammates behind glass and he's taking part in sessions. He said he's been feeling a bit lonely.
Why does he have to watch him behind glass? What's the rule there?
Because he's not allowed to take part in
Is glass a particular rule?
Apparently so.
Could it not be a shark cage or something? What is there? I'm right with you, Richard. What? Why has he got to be behind glass? Is it like a restraining order?
It's a strange one. It's sad for the situation he's in, I suppose, but... It's one of those where do you think the transfer should be allowed to go through, or do you rules are rules? Yeah, it's tough. It was late.
It's like, well, if you allow 14 seconds, then what do you allow? I know it's only 14 seconds, but then somebody will then say, well, you allowed 14 seconds, or you allowed 2 minutes, and then they'll allow that, and then another one will say, oh, we allowed 2 minutes, we allowed 10 minutes. If there's a time, then there's a time, unfortunately.
If it was my club, of course I'd want it to go through. But it's not my club, and that's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
And going back a couple of summers ago, probably something around that time frame would have ended up with De Gea signing for Real Madrid.
Right. Yeah, wasn't there actually a similar situation with Andrei Arshavin's transfer? That was late, but they still managed to get that to go through. And I think half the problem is it was all so cloak and dagger and clandestine that they could tell us anything and we wouldn't really know.
Well, they've made...
All clubs have sort of an extra amount of time if it's sort of already the wheels are in motion, don't they? They already have some sort of like an extra 2 hours over the top. It's all sort of, apart from the I's and the T's crossed.
If they've already strapped the paperwork to the carrier pigeon's leg.
So they've already had that extra 2 hours, Leicester, to have got it through, and it was after that period that it was late.
Why have the extra 2 hours? We can keep going. We can keep going like this. I know, it's the whole concept of the transfer window in itself is flawed, and things like being 14 seconds late only serve to show how flawed the system is.
What would you do? Would you just have it open transfers then? See.
Well, that's what it used to be, and we got on all right. I kind of see the Premier League club's perspective of things as well, where they're saying, can you shut the window before the season actually kicks off? And that makes perfect sense as well. Mm-hmm. Why go to August the 31st, or sometimes even September the 1st if it's a Sunday, and have teams in this sort of position, where at least it shuts the day before the season kicks off, bang, done. That's your squad. Off you go.
No, I completely agree with you. And I think it was a big problem. You know, you look at players like Van Dijk and Kuhn not playing, transfers is unresolved. I think it's definitely the right thing to do. I just hope that the other major years follow suit otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, we don't all kick off at the same time, which is another problem. But maybe that's something that they could all look at. UEFA-wide, why not have it? Everyone starts same time. I'm not sure what the problem with that is.
I think some countries, the daylight hours, like you look, go to, I know it's the sort of the smaller leagues, but the Scandinavian countries, it's just pitch black for how many hours of the day.
Oh yeah, so well, there are others like Russia, the Russian league, obviously, where they run completely differently. That's fair enough, but there's a large trench of centralized major leagues who could all kick off at around the same time or at exactly the same time. Yeah, 100%. Obviously, there are those countries where the weather and daylight cause a big problem. It's probably more the weather than the daylight because they have these things called floodlights.
And just finally, I just want to mention, I'm sure quite a lot of people will be aware FIFA 18's out tonight. But Dele Alli said that he's not going to be playing as himself because his FIFA rating's too low. He's only been rated 84, and Rio Ferdinand asked him to hold his ultimate team card, and he said he didn't want to hold it. And then he crossed out some of the stats and upgraded that he held it up. He said, and
I wonder if they're going to add in the one finger salute celebration for it.
Maybe
for the England game, would we?
I think that certainly cost ratings points. That his intelligence rating must have plummeted after that.
It'd be minus figures by now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a video game. Who cares? Mm. From his perspective, you know, if I was him, I'm a incredibly talented young footballer earning large amounts of money, greatly respected by large proportions of the populace, probably disliked massively by another proportion of it, fine. But if I've got that, who cares what my rating is on FIFA?
True. All right, so Dele Alli's been picked in the latest England squad despite a potential ban. Do you think he should have been picked anyway?
Yeah, he's one of the most talented footballers that there is for England.
Yeah, well, the FA haven't been put... If the FA are not at fault here, if he is suspended, that's not their fault. It should have been done and sorted out by now. Mm-hmm. So with him, at the moment, he is available for selection, so why shouldn't they pick him?
I guess if he wasn't picked as well, it would almost be admitting guilt in a way. You know, they're saying, oh, but I suppose whether he's picked or not, though, is a separate issue. Because, you know, you'd be surprised if against Slovenia and Lithuania you're having problems with or without Dele Alli.
It's England.
The fact that they've called in the likes of Fabian Delph. I think that they're already throwing in players that aren't really going to get a game, that are just a waste of a space in the squad. So might as well stick.
There's a few names, aren't there? I see three names that jump out, and Delph is one of them. It seems that an appearance out of position for Manchester City, scoring a goal with your right foot, gets you in the England squad. So I don't think he's done anything else for the last 6 months at least.
I think he's played 5 games in something like 13 months.
So, yeah, is that form to get you in an England squad? I doubt it. And then Livermore's been in a few squads for a while. Now, I'll admit that I don't follow him particularly closely, but what I see, I wonder why he's in. Nothing against the guy, but
well, the thing I'm not sure which other central midfielders England could pick. Who would you put in instead? I mean, it's easy to say what's Fabian Delph done, but I can't think of many central midfielders who are serious case.
That's a good point. Let's have a look.
For me, I'd pick ahead of those without doing much digging. You've got to have a look at James Ward-Prowse, haven't you?
Yeah, that's a good definitely.
And he's been playing very well. He's got quality on the ball for certain. I wouldn't be picking players because they can take a dead ball, but he can. It's a nice added bonus to his game. So, I mean, Ward-Prowse is one I'd certainly look at ahead of both of those players.
That's fair. How's
Jack Cork been doing this season?
Yeah, he's had a decent start at Burnley as well, hasn't he?
He's another player who's very neat and tidy in there. Does he offer more than Livermore, or is he very similar? Possibly. Has he played more games in the last 5 or 6 months, or 13 months even, than Fabian Delph? Definitely.
James Ward-Prowse in particular, I'd have in there. I'd be certainly looking at the successes that the younger England teams had over the summer, and blooding in a couple of them. They did excellent. It's what Germany did for how many years?
I think this might be a time I'm actually justified in saying Tom Cleverley deserves a place in the England squad because...
I would have to take your word for it. No, honestly, I've seen a bit of Watford again, but not a huge amount. Mm-hmm. If he's playing well, can't argue with it.
Isn't that just basically the same as having Livermore in, though? He's a player that's only really going to ever have a certain ceiling.
Looking at other aspects of the squad, four goalkeeper picks, Joe Hart, Fraser Forster, Jack Butland and Jordan Pick. Strange one to pick four keepers, but I think there's a big debate at the moment about who England's best goalkeeper is. Joe Hart started the last games, but how long can he hold on to his place for?
He's no longer the best keeper for England. You see him week in, week out now for West Ham, and I think it sort of shows his limitations nowadays.
I'm not sure why there's a debate about who the best goalkeeper. I think most people feel Butland is there now.
I was going to disagree and say Jordan Pickford.
Well, in that case, the debate doesn't involve Joe Hart.
Yeah, well, for sure. But I think
I'm not sure. Pickford is impressive, but I feel more impressed with Pickford's distribution than I do with his goalkeeping. So if Pep Guardiola was England manager, I would pick Jordan Pickford, but he's not. So I think Jack Butland is probably England's best goalkeeper with Gareth Southgate as manager.
No, I can respect Butland. Butland's a very good goalkeeper as well. I'd be a bit disappointed if he said Joe Hart, but yeah. What do you think, Richard?
I'd certainly go.
I maybe should have done a poll to see which...
I would have both of them ahead of Hart nowadays by a country mile.
Do we think there's any way back for Joe Hart? I mean, it's hard to predict what's going to happen to a player's career, but he certainly doesn't seem to be improving. He just seems to be slowly fading away.
I think
he's sort of Wayne Rooney in goal.
I think the main thing is that you go back a few years and we didn't have much competition to Joe Hart or serious you could make a case for. Now we've got two options: Jack Butland, Jordan Pickford, who are clearly better goalkeepers, and the fact there's two of them. If it was just one or the other, then maybe there'd be a way back. But I think the fact there's two who are both young goalkeepers amongst the best in the world, and I think it's very difficult for Joe Hart myself.
I've got
my England midfield list finally, by the way.
Okay.
I've got one I think is worth a shout. About Tom Davis from Everton.
Oh, he was my first one I was going to say.
Sorry, I stole your thunder. But
yes, most certainly.
He's been terrific for a while now. And we're talking about young players. Would it be worth looking at Tom Davis ahead of Jake Livermore or Fabian Delph? I'm not going to. I think it's obvious.
I'm presuming Tom Davis is the under 21 side. I'd be amazed if he wasn't there. Is there an argument about educating players and going through the ranks rather than just throwing them into
Marcus Rashford. I would say yes, but if the young player is the best player in that position, then you've got to pick him, haven't you? I mean, Germany are able to pick their under 21s to go and win the Confederations Cup because that's how strong their first team is. They don't need to bring these players in to bolster that squad because the core is strong in the first place. If it's not strong in the first place, you've got to bring them up. And that's been our problem for a long time. We have to keep bringing up these younger players because the meat on the bones isn't there.
Yes, I'd certainly be giving Tom Davies a look into the squad and just sort of to blood him in and show him what it's about. Yeah, similar with like Lewis Cook from Bournemouth. Yeah.
Has he played a lot this season? I'm not sure he has, but he was the captain in the summer, so he should be right up on the list just for that.
And Loftus-Cheek. I know that Palace are having a bit of a mare, but he's a good player.
It'd certainly be a similar style of play.
There's just one final question I want to ask before. Jermaine Defoe has been picked. Do you think he's still worthy of a place in the...
What's it doing? What benefit is it?
Well, is he one of the best five English strikers, I suppose? Four English strikers.
Well, he's not exactly set Bournemouth alight, has he? But Bournemouth aren't flying. I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure. It's so early in the season that it's quite tough to make that sort of call. Are you going to go... You're kind of still looking a little bit at last season's form, even now. Has he been one of the best four English strikers so far this season? I would say probably not. Does Southgate trust him and believe he can offer something? Probably. Is that right? Maybe. Don't know. It's a tough call. But is the call based on winning these two games or is it based on building for next summer?
I'd have given like Andre Gray a chance over Defoe.
There's a few that, again, there's a few who've done all right and there's no one who's absolutely amazing apart from Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Every other England or English striker is in Harry Kane's goal scoring shadow, and then Rashford is different. It's about his creativity. Then what else is there for our strikers?
Again, similar to what mentioned before, give somebody like Solanke a run in.
Possibly, all right. If Solanke played some more games, I would definitely agree with you.
I got player of the tournament at the under-20s.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about for Liverpool. He's not playing well. Yeah. Tammy Abraham, though, on the other hand,
has been
playing regularly and he's scored a couple of goals for Swansea. Would it be worth having a look at him? Similar sort of argument. Solanke, it's just that he's played a few more minutes. I think the amount of minutes at this stage of the season is probably quite important. Is Tammy Abraham one of the four best England strikers? Don't know. Could he be? Maybe. Who are the four best England strikers?
See, the reason I brought up Defoe and you brought up some young players who clearly have got some potential, but for me, I'd have picked Danny Welbeck because he's had a great start to the season for Arsenal and he has that history with, you know, a decent performer under, you know, he's got that experience. And for me,
I'm surprised he's not in the squad, but I'm not a particularly big Welbeck fan. Two reasons for that. One, whenever I criticise him while I'm watching a live game, he scores a goal. It's happened too many times. The other one, and this is why I criticise, is boy, does he miss some chances. I don't believe he's a clinical player.
No,
he gets into very good positions, which, again, it is half the battle, but what he misses astounds me. And that's just my opinion and what I feel on Welbeck.
I think he does a good job when he puts an England shirt on. He sort of ups his level, I think, playing for England as he has done for as at a club level. I'd have him in a squad.
What about Nathan Redmond?
I'd like to see Nathan squad myself. I've gone on record saying I'm a bit. We've not got many wide players in the squad.
I'll put him out there, and I might drag him back a little bit. Has he settled in a position? Because I know last season they tried to use him as a forward, and I think he's been pulled wide again. So if that's not fixed soon, is he in danger of turning into a poor man's Danny Welbeck? Or even worse, a poor man's Theo Walcott?
With Redmond, more of a big fish in a small pond at Southampton. He's one of their, him and Gabbiadini are their main men in attack. The fact that he is that really helps him, I think, rather than being, say, a Walcott, where he was one of several options on having an attack and didn't help him. I'd rather have a player in Redmond's than, say, a...
Yes, I can see where you're coming from there, yeah.
What has Walcott done for 7-8 years now? Even at club level, he'll play one good game and then you'll forget about him again for another half a season.
Well, he has like a run, doesn't he? He sort of has a month and a bit where it's looking like really good. It's looking like he is settling into that Thierry Henry cutting in from the wings position. It's going well, and then something will stop that momentum, be it injury, be it loss of confidence, loss of form. It's just, he's had a stop-start career, and he's worn that potential label for a very long time, and I don't think he can wear it for any longer.
But like I said, from when he joined Arsenal to now, how has he advanced?
You could say that about, well, many Arsenal players of that type, and that's one of the criticism I would chuck at them. Walcott is now 28 years old, 28, and we're still talking about potential.
All right, well, I want to move on from there and talk about Harry Kane and his potential. First of all, we had a poll on the Twitter page of who the best striker in the Premier League, with the four nominees: Morata, Kane, Lukaku, and Aguero. Who would you guys be if you had to pick?
Aguero.
I'd say Aguero is the one that easily fits into a world-class bracket. I don't know if that makes him the best in the Premier League, if that makes
best,
sense.
The best for the Premier League, do you mean?
Yeah. Well, obviously, he has done very, very well. He would go off to La Liga or any other league and do the same, which I don't think that the likes of Kane or Lukaku perhaps would do. But I think Kane and Lukaku are better fits in the Premier League.
I think for me, I agree that if I was playing a cup final or something tomorrow, I had to pick one striker, I would pick Aguero. If I had to sign a player, I'd pick him partly because...
Pick Kane as the best striker in the Premier League. But I don't think he's the best striker of the four.
I'm just going to say Aguero again. the area that Harry Kane has over Aguero is aerial ability. Everything else, Aguero has the technical ability, the finishing ability, the long range shooting. He's even getting the assists as well. The goal he scored recently that was compared to Maradona, where he beat a few players before finishing. I can't remember which of the heavy wins it was. I think it was when he scored a hat-trick. So that would have been, not Palace, it would have been the game before Watford. He has these attributes of a player who can score goals even without particularly good teammates. And part of the question is, and I was thinking, who they got in the team with them. And that would very much influence my decision as to who I picked. I mean, if I've got Stuart Downing in my team, I would take Harry Kane. If I've got David Silva in my team, if I've got Henrik Mkhitaryan in my team, I'd take Aguero. But if I haven't got much of anything else, I've got a team full of solid players, I'd take Aguero.
I guess we're discounting Lukaku and Morata from the debate. Cause...
And it's hard to not give a shout for either of them, really, because like Lukaku, it was either the youngest to get to 100 goals in the Premier League, and you look how he's bedded in at United. What is it? How many goals in the, how many games now for him?
He's scored in every game so far.
Yeah. And we're sort of ruling him out on that. You put him in the right team, the right jigsaw piece, like he looks to be at United. And, yeah, he could probably keep scoring every game for the rest, for the whole season. But is he as good as Aguero and Kane? I'd probably say not.
No, I don't think so. I don't think either of them. But, again, there's another aspect of the question, which is player or goal scorer? Because there's no doubt that Lukaku trails all three of them as a foot overall. No doubt about that. But his ability to put the ball into the, you know, the, between those posts and hitting that net and crossing that white line is as good as anybody. Probably as good as anybody apart from that elite of Lewandowski, Messi, Ronaldo, Aubameyang, you know, these 30, 40 goal strikers. In the 20 plus goal, 25 to 30 goal unit, he's as good as any of the rest for scoring goals. But there's more to, you know, there's more to these other players than just, I say just scoring goals. I hate that. And I just used it. It's the hardest thing to do. It's why these players cost so much money. But when you're comparing them to other players, you've got to look at their game overall. And the other three have more to their game than Lukaku does.
What you have with Lukaku, though, is just that, that just the speed and power of him is, if a defender's not up for a battle with him, he's just, he will just trample all over a defender.
Well, I think looking at the poll results, Lukaku was fourth with 18%, Morata 21%. I think the reason they're, well, part of the reason they're bottom two maybe is starting out with a new Newcastle United. Maybe in, you know, in a couple of years, we might be seeing a very different result, I think, especially with Morata being second choice.
I think Morata was a magnificent player. Mm. I genuinely do. He's played how many games for Chelsea? Maybe six. It's for me, that's not enough to make a real judgment. From what I saw at Juventus, he was sensational. And as you said, at Madrid, he just couldn't get that opportunity. But it's what we talk about, that extra level. That was Ronaldo, Benzema and Bale ahead. That's another tier of footballer. But he is a fantastic player. And if he hasn't got 20 in all, across all competitions by the end of the season, I will be mightily shocked, or he will have been injured.
Well, Aguero was second in the poll with 24%, which meant that Kane won it with 37, so he won it by quite some margin.
Last time I was on with Chris, we talked about the lack of Aguero love out there, and this poll just continues to illustrate that.
No, I agree with you. I'd have voted Aguero.
I think it's the wording of the question. If you took out the word for, if you didn't mention Premier League, and it was just which is the best striker, I would pick Aguero.
Maybe I should word the question different for next week's show and see if we get a different answer. All right, so I want to move on and discuss the Champions League. Quite a lot of stories came out of it, but we'll start with Bayern Munich as Carlo Ancelotti got sacked after they lost. I'll come on to PSG shortly, but seems a bit harsh sacking Ancelotti, although apparently the dressing room lost the players.
I think a bit of this comes back to last season as well, where it's a bit of a reverse of what happened last night, in that last season he had quite a lot of young players come into the club and then just discarded them, didn't bother to play them. And now this season, last night, he went the complete opposite, didn't bother to play Robin and Ribery, and they got absolutely tonked. He's fallen on his sword for it. So I think he's the dressing room can't make the mind of what he's, they think he's can't make his mind up on what he's doing, and they want rid.
I think it is massively, massively harsh and slightly idiotic, to be honest, because simply put, you just look where he's gone. He has won trophies everywhere. He's won the Champions League. He's won the league title. He just picks up trophies for fun. There's not many managers of his calibre out there. And he didn't have a brilliant start last season. They still won the league. Who are they going to get? That's the other question. You've got to always think that. When they sack their manager, it's the perennial Arsene Wenger question. Yes, but who are we going to get instead? And you're going, it doesn't matter. Wenger has just lost it. Get anyone in. But this is Carlo Ancelotti. Who are they going to get to replace him?
Well, the two names that I've seen linked club are Willie Sagnol, who's in temporarily in charge. He played for Bayern as a right back in the early 2000s. The other name is Thomas Tuchel, who they may get from Dortmund.
And he left because Dortmund wanted to build, well, one of the reasons was Dortmund wanted to build this young team full of upcoming hot prospects, and he wanted success now. He wanted the squad ready to go. So arguably he would get that into Bayern.
I think part of it they were saying was that a German coach is wanted at the club. I mean, the last German coach there was Jupp Heynckes, who won the treble before handing it over to Guardiola.
Yeah. Have they linked Klopp with Bayern yet?
They probably will. There was talk about it earlier in the summer, actually.
Yes, there was.
And there keeps being... There seems to be a growing amount of unrest at Liverpool in regards to Klopp. Yeah, every week there seems to be just a smattering more of the fans there that on Twitter and such starting to have a bit of murmurings about him.
Yeah. It has been a middling run recently, so that probably contributes to it, probably, certainly contributes to it. If that run changes, then that smattering may disappear, but you never quite know.
There was one even the other week that was trying to get together the old flyer plane with a banner behind.
Which is, I think that's a little bit ridiculous right now, to be honest with you.
I totally agree. I think he's still taking the club in the right direction. But and there's something as well that hard facts-wise of him up to this stage of his career at Liverpool compared to the same amount of games of Brendan Rodgers, and Rodgers is ahead.
Yes, but Brendan Rodgers' problem wasn't up to this point. It was what happened afterward. Yeah. So I think you'll find that quite soon Brendan Rodgers' record will dip compared to Klopp's. Even if Klopp's just stays percentile-wise the same as it is, you'll find it falls... Rodgers won't compare as favourably because it starts to go downhill very quickly when Suarez leaves.
Do you think part of it with Klopp and Liverpool is that the defence is so weak and it's almost like it's obvious to the fans what needs doing? Like, you know, say with Arsenal, people have had a go at Wenger for years because they obviously need a defensive midfielder. Is it the case with Liverpool where every fan knew in the summer they should get a centre-back and a goalie and they didn't?
But they didn't. It's not... They did try. Goalkeeper, they didn't. But centre-back, we all know that they tried.
Well, they tried to get Van Dijk, but, you know, they may have tried, but they failed.
They did.
Yeah, there's more than one centre-back in the world.
There is, but I had this conversation with other people as well. They must have, and I believe that they did, identify Van Dijk as the right centre-back. For various things like aerial duels, one pace, ability to pass the ball, etc. And when you started to put all the factors together, he was the one who came out as the right player, which is why they chased him, and they didn't particularly want to go for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the same kettle of fish. Like United striker wise, they had identified Griezmann for months and months. It was pretty much all ready to go. That then, obviously, the transfer ban came in. He said he wanted to remain loyal to the club. Then, straight afterwards, they're in for Morata. Morata's dyeing his hair red, ready to join United. And then, all of a sudden, they decide to go for Lukaku at the last minute. But, you know, that's the third choice that they went in for. It worked out all fine there. And all three of those players are very, very different players.
Yeah, the counter that I would make to that, I am defending Liverpool here, is that it is easier to reorganise slightly what you do in your forward positions to massively reorganise what you do in your defensive positions. And that's not to say that they probably should or shouldn't reorganise what they're doing defensively, but in order to carry on as they have been, that's the player that they identified to do that rather than someone drastically different.
You look at that defence as it is now. You've got Moreno, who's played the majority of the games at left back, Alexander Arnold, who may become a good player but at the moment not good enough. And then the centre backs, you know, you've got Matip Lovren and Rognar Klavan's played quite a few games, and it seems blatantly obvious that that's not good enough. Even if
he did 11 goals so far in the league, which is the same as Bournemouth, who were second bottom. Huddersfield have conceded 3. If you conceded 8 more goals than Huddersfield after this stage of the season, are you really going to be a title contender?
Unlikely, but 5 of those were in one game.
Well, that still leaves you 6 goals in the other games.
Yeah, true. But that's just one way of, when you break it down, they did concede 5 in that game. It is clear that the defending or the setup isn't right. And if it was one of my teams, that's not the way I like to set up my defensive unit. Mm-hmm. And it's not how they defend without the ball that's a problem. It's how they defend when they are in possession that is a problem. They are too high and too wide, the centre-backs, and often the deepest defender is Jordan Henderson. He is often in a position behind the two central defenders, which is why it's so easy to open them up with one pass played into the fullback areas and someone with pace runs onto it because of how high they are and also the positioning. Now, that's why I say the particular individual was identified rather than another, because that's the system, that's not the individual. So, and that won't change.
Okay, so that's an argument that the players themselves are fine and that it's tactically wrong, and, you know, surely that's even worse for you.
There's a bit of both, because some of those players aren't fine. Mm. I think Matip is fine. I think the fullbacks, the right side for the fullbacks, okay. I was picking Robertson ahead of Moreno, because agreed. I think Moreno does make those individual errors. And Lovren and Klavan, yeah, they have not proven themselves over a prolonged period. Different personnel would help, but I'm not sure that they do solve the issue.
I just want to look at Liverpool as well. They drew 1-1 with Spartak Moscow, and people have criticised them, but they've got 2 games against Maribor to follow, which you'd expect them to get 6 points from. Is it not that bad a result, though, for Liverpool? You know, going to Russia and getting a point? I don't think that's that bad a result, and I think they'll have gone a bit over.
How did United go on in Russia?
Well, United played CSKA, and I thought CSKA played atrociously. I don't think Liverpool played atrociously. I don't know. I think maybe people are being a little bit harsh on Liverpool for getting a 1-1 draw in Russia.
Yeah, I think, well, it depends on the time of year you go to Russia for a start. Mm. I think both clubs got lucky in that the first away game was in Russia rather than it being, you know, at the end of the group stage. Mm-hmm. Very, very different game then. I think Liverpool are still going to make it through from the group. Well, I don't think they're going to be pulling up any trees once it gets to the knockout stage.
The context of the 2-2 home draw makes the 1-1 away from home a worse result. So because of that, if you win your first home game and you win the draw of the away game, 4 points on the board, thank you very much. You draw that first home game, you draw the next one, not so clever. Of course, 2 draws is better than 2 defeats, stating the obvious. The other thing that makes it slightly disappointing is the amount of chances Liverpool missed. I mean, even in the last 5 minutes, they missed 3 really good chances. And there were plenty before that. And then you factor in the goal that was scored, where many people suggest the goalkeeper should be saving it. Mm-hmm. So when you put these things in together, it becomes more disappointing in that context. In a different context, one all away Champions League is fine.
Okay, moving on from Liverpool, we mentioned Bayern winning 3-0 against, PSG getting a 3. Mbappe was fantastic, he got man of the match. Neymar and Cavani were even agreeing and getting on. A PSG serious?
I'd say so. I think you look at that, you know, it's not, everybody sort of thinks of that forward three, and I think it's like, wow, just how good they are. You look at the rest of the team, and it's a solid team. You know, Verratti, Di Maria, Silva, Alves, they're all like top players involved with that. When you've got the likes of Draxler that's now struggling to get in, get a game.
Yeah, I mean, you can keep going. You've got Lucas Moura, Javier Pastore, Thiago Silva stood around. There's Meunier, the fullback, is an excellent player. Yeah, there's plenty there. There's plenty there. The only reason that people don't think they're contenders is because they go, oh, Ligue 1, oh, it's not very good. Oh, it's an uncompetitive league. Or what do they play against? Does that get them ready for Champions League? When you've got that amount of quality, got to be considered contenders. I mean, arguably, their starting 11, you could argue it's better than Barcelona's.
And people sort of say about the French league last year, well, the French league in general, but Monaco got to the semi-finals last year. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not all slouches in the French league anymore.
I guess you can make the counter argument as well, even as what Peter was saying about the the French league. You know, for some teams where they don't have any serious domestic competition, it means they can rest all their players. The Champions League is it, and they're preparing for those Champions Leagues before, and which, you know, benefits them.
Well, that's it. Like people now, there's the counter argument on that is that the English league is now too hard. English teams won't do well in Europe because every time before and after a European game, they're going to have a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was quite a few years ago now, but I remember Ferguson saying that because United had won the league so early, they weren't sharp when it came to their European games. That was quite a while back. And that, I think people still cling to that sort of thing and go, oh, that's why they won't be able too easy for them during their league campaign. They won't be sharp when it comes to Europe. They'll be all be on deck chairs smoking cigars with cocktails in their hands. They won't be raw and ready. You're saying, I'm not sure that's true.
Celtic are in obviously a pretty uncompetitive league, but they got an impressive result at Anderlecht. It's only their second ever away win. And, you know, in that group, you've got to assume Celtic and Anderlecht aren't going to get any points against PSG or Bayern Munich. That's a huge result for them in terms of getting third place and getting Europa League second part of the season. You know, it's pretty obviously their target. I mean, they can't possibly...
What I'd be saying, though, if presumably the next game for Celtic is a home game versus Bayern Munich.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
If you're wanting to play Bayern Munich at any time, it's probably now.
How long is it until that game?
It's about a month away because you've got the internationals it's after. You've got a double header. I think it's...
You would imagine they'd have a new manager in place by then. And would also imagine that manager would be licking their lips at the prospect of Celtic.
Yeah.
Or am I doing Celtic down?
I think Lee Griffiths is a very impressive player for them. And, you know, he's somebody I'd like to see get a Premier League. But, yeah, other than that, you know, Celtic on paper, aren't they?
It's the... I'm just finding it now. Oh, it's the away game for... It's at Bayern, the first game. It's the 18th of October.
Yeah, I think the new Bayern manager will probably be thinking that's a nice game to get us started. It might be harsh, but Celtic, as well as they're doing in the domestic league and as good a job Brendan Rodgers is doing, they suffer from the problem that many other smaller leagues do. It's just they can't compete financially. And when you've got juggernauts that come in and purchase Neymar and Mbappe, however they have managed to pull it off, it's just hard for almost anyone to compete with that. Never mind a team or league where there's very little money around.
Moving on from that, Tottenham got an impressive. They've had an impressive start. They beat Dortmund 3-1 in the first match day, was probably the better result. Beat Apoel 3-0, so they've got. And also Chelsea also have perfect. Beat Atletico Madrid 2-1. Batshuayi with that last minute goal, and that's quite a big result, I think, for Chelsea because they've got three sides in their group. In Roma themselves and Atletico are capable of going through, you know, have a serious chance.
I think we've seen two of the best results for English sides in recent times in the last few weeks. That win against Dortmund is a phenomenal result. And then for Chelsea to go to Atletico and win 2-1 and end an 11-game unbeaten home record in Europe, those are two superb results that are probably... I don't think people have been talking too much about the Tottenham win against Dortmund, and people aren't really speaking that much about the Chelsea result either. But that was two tremendous results.
Yeah, and any side in Europe would look at an away game at Atletico Madrid and not relish it. So to come away and to do it in the last minute as well is going to really grind with Atletico Madrid. Did you both see the picture of Diego Costa when it went in?
Extra motivation there, but yes.
I saw Batshuayi tweeted a picture of himself as Batman, and he also tweeted him with his favourite striker. He was Costa and Torres, and tweeted an image about how great it was to meet his favourite player in Torres. But yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic result. I think, you know, you could say with Atletico, they've just moved into a new stadium. Whether that was a factor, I'm not sure. But the fact that Chelsea went there and they didn't only win the game, but the fashion they won it, they completely deserved to win. They battered Atletico. And I think Peter's right. I think this and the Dortmund result are two of the best results English sides have had in recent years in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't do much last year, did we, in English sides? Performances were pretty poor. I mean, the previous year, City quarterfinals, I think, was that right? And
yeah, they went out to.
Yeah, not been well represented, but it's a good. I think personally, think it's a good sign, and I hope it continues. But both, we have to go give them, as much as we criticise teams for underperforming, we have to give them credit when they do. And boy, have Chelsea and Tottenham performed.
You looked at Tottenham when that group was announced and just thought, well, Spurs are out.
Yeah, see you later.
But, you know, now to after two games, be on 6 points. Yeah, they've not played Real Madrid as yet, but, you know, if they manage to get a point, you know, a draw at the home game, probably lose the away one. Anything better than what Dortmund get against Real Madrid, and they're through.
Yeah. They could lose both games and still have a chance of getting through.
Well, you assume Dortmund would get two wins over Apoel, and Tottenham would. If you assume Tottenham get the 3 points against Apoel as well, it looks pretty positive for Tottenham.
Yeah,
it's certainly a big task for Dortmund to catch up 6 points now.
City, just want to mention City atop as well, with two wins they beat Shakhtar. They've got two games against Napoli coming up, who are probably the strongest side in there. And also United, as we touched on earlier in the show, they won there against CSKA Moscow, also with a perfect group record.
I really want to see the City-Napoli games. I think some of the football on show in those games should be fantastic. And I fully expect City to go through with ease in their group, and United similarly.
I just want to finish by...
They played some nice football in the game against City.
I just want to finish by quickly mentioning Monaco and Leipzig as well, who a lot of people thought would do well. Both of them only have 1 point in their group, and it's not looking like they're too positive for their chances. Besiktas and Porto. For me, when the group was announced, this was the group I was most interested in, because I thought they were all four similar sides. But surprising that Monaco and Leipzig... both on only 1 point, and that was with a draw against each other.
Yes, it was less the group of death and more the group of life, wasn't it? Because they all had an equally bright opportunity. Monaco, I've always thought it was going to be difficult for Monaco, having sold half their team and this season. to replicate what they've done in previous years would have been a huge ask. Leipzig are interesting because they haven't lost that many players, but have they been destabilized by one of their key players leaving in January, if the rumors are true, but certainly in the summer? Possible. Or maybe it was just that Timo Werner's ears couldn't handle it.
All right, well, thanks for joining us tonight. You can follow us on Twitter at V2Football and check out our website, V2. It's good night from me and good night from Peter and...
Good night.
Good night.